So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea, deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it, come on let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
Welcome to Random Waypoints Podcast. We have got a lot to talk to you guys about today. And Phil, what's on the agenda?
We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Obviously, first, we're going to cover the news. There's a lot going on with Rivian and a lot of the other electric companies and their vehicles. We're going to talk about some of the scams that you need to be wary of when you're traveling and crossing borders. We're going to cover some of the major events that are upcoming, not just Jeep events, but a lot of different vehicle-specific events. And we're going to cover some other things that you're just going to have to wait around and hear. How you doing, Mike?
I am doing pretty well, actually. Pretty well. Lots going on. But I'm excited about the next couple months. And we're going to be talking about some of that probably the next podcast, because I got some big announcements to make, but we're not going to get to that today.
Yes. So big news in electric vehicle world is that the CEO of Rivian did an interview with a famous YouTuber in the electronics world named Marcus Brown. And he said some interesting things. One is that they're already working on a new vehicle called the R2. Now, the R2 isn't an upgrade of the R1. This is a totally new vehicle. And two major things that he said about it is that it was going to be considerably cheaper, and that it would be smaller, and that it would be more practical for outdoorsmen. So that's big news. And I'll leave a link in the description for people, because I think they'll enjoy seeing the whole, I think it's an hour and a half long interview, and they'll probably cover far more than we're going to cover. Because the things that
you're talking about, a company that's putting out a second car, and most electric car companies aren't even off the ground yet. You know, outside of Tesla as being an independent electric car company, nobody else really has, you know, most of them are in design and testing stages. So that's a pretty big announcement that they're going to come out with car number two.
So I listened to some of the forums that have discussed this, and people are giving their opinions of what direction they think they'll go outside of what he mentioned. And they think this will be the more off road worthy one. It'll be lighter because it has fewer toys. A quote from the CEO himself: they've already made their luxury vehicle, so they consider the one that they created their luxury vehicle. So this is going to be a more workhorse of a vehicle, and I think that's a good thing, because most people, that's their hindrance. They don't want to pay $80,000 for a vehicle and get pinstripes on it 2 days later. From what they're saying, this might be in the price range more for them to actually get out there and do it.
I agree. You know, it was interesting. I was looking at an article today talking about incentives for, you know, government tax incentives for electric vehicles in the United States. And I noticed that primarily, there's actually not that many vehicles on it. They're all American. And I think Jeep's got one on there. The Ford range had them on there. Tesla, I think all of Teslas were on there. A couple GMs and stuff. But, you know, there's some big tax dollars out there, potential. And what I was reading was like half of it is incentivized based on being made in North America. And the other half, which is a great thing. And the other half was also in production of the metals and whatnot that go into the battery. So the battery component part of it. And it either has to be made in the United States or one of our trade partners that's been approved. So good news, not China. And I think over time, you know, you also see that there's manufacturers like Hyundai, I think, and Honda are developing and in the process of producing plants in the United States to build these things, probably to try to get the government incentive on their vehicles as well, because it's a big incentive for people that are purchasing new vehicles, right?
Yes. And some more good news about that is usually when you hear about these things, there's always some kind of catch or a loophole or whatever, where after all is said and done, you don't save the money that you thought you were. Well, one of the great things about when you dig deeper into these incentives is not only do you get that dollar amount of the incentive, but the manufacturers, in order for you to get that incentive, they have to sell the vehicle at MSRP or below. Now, you know, there's been a lot of gouging and pricing of these vehicles where they're selling them over MSRP. So one is it's incentive to actually sell it at a decent price and below. So just good news all around about this.
Yeah. It's definitely stay tuned for that out there.
And we didn't mention like the dollar amounts. They range from like $3,750 all the way up to $7,500. And they even have incentives for people with businesses and LLCs. I'm not going to get into that. You'll have to look that up on your own, you business people out there.
And being tax day tomorrow, it's a big deal. We're talking about taxes here. And my only other comment on that is you got to wonder that now that you're getting, you know, they're putting out these incentives, because obviously the government's pushing for more people to buy electric vehicles, you know, and the wonder is, of course, we'll give you the negative side, is where if the revenue is diminished coming in because people are buying those cars, they're obviously going to collect the revenue from something else. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that might be.
I agree. I'm hoping it's not some kind of outrageous tax on fuel.
Well, and that could be a double whammy, because that, you know, that's a double incentive to go towards electric vehicles. But as we've talked about in past podcasts, you know, if that tax is only on the consumer purchases of fuel, that's one thing. But if it's on all fuel or the development on the corporations that are producing the fuel, that's going to ultimately affect electricity, which is what powers the electric car. So we'll see.
I got a letter from the Toyota press room, and I'm going to read the first couple of sentences. ExxonMobil has partnered with Toyota in exploring innovative fuel blends with the potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from road transportation up to 75%. Compared to conventional fuels available today. Toyota has determined that these innovative formulas are compatible with older vehicles as well as its current model lineup. So we're talking about this, but this is a news item. I had a hard time seeing any other information about it other than from Toyota and ExxonMobil. And I think this is probably some of the biggest major news in that sector.
Well, because presumably that is somewhat fossil fuel based, if it's going to be able to be taking a benefit from current vehicles, right? So that is big news, because let me tell you, if I could save 70% of my fuel in my current vehicles, particularly my one that's sitting here behind me, that's 8 to 10 miles a gallon. That's a big deal, right? And you and I talked about this at a prior podcast. My fear continues to be with the push towards EV that your lower economic levels are not able to afford buying new cars. So there's got to be some kind of solution for people that just simply cannot drop, whether it's as low as $40,000 or as high as, you know, $120,000 on a new electric vehicle. That's a lot to push people into that just simply cannot afford that. So this is an interesting option.
Well, when you look at it from the way that you just described, there's also an infrastructure issue too. Like the neighborhood I'm in, there's all kinds of places for you to charge a vehicle. People charge them at their homes. It's part of life here.
Yeah.
But a lower income person, they'll run out of power getting to a place to fuel it and drive it back home. They're probably living in a home or in an apartment where they can't just readily go out and get the charging system and have it added to their apartment building or whatever. So
not economically feasible to install the power grid or the charger. And, you know, if they don't have it, like, let's say they're in an apartment that doesn't have garages. So they don't have their own garage, possibly. That's, you know, that's one of the things that has not been discussed at all, in my opinion, about the rollout and the rolling towards the electric thing is how the hell are we actually going to do this? And like you said, if you live in a neighborhood that's been largely on its way towards EV for a while, and it's a more affluent area that has, you know, everybody's got a garage and everybody's got the power grid exists. That's at a higher level. And there's plenty of charging stations that are not that far away. Well, that's a no-brainer, but that's not the way it is in the bulk of America. Even, you know, 95% of America is rural, for one. And two, you know, the vast majority of populations are living in cities. So look, take on the East Coast, like New York City. I mean, people are parking their cars on the street and moving them from one side of the road to the other, depending on, you know, what day it is for the parking and whatever on the restrictions. So, you know, explain to me how we're going to roll out this. Like there's so many unanswered questions. It's not all about just let's give some incentives. Let's all buy electric. It's great. It's good for the environment. Well, that's wonderful, but.
Mike, you made me think about something, and I hope it doesn't pan out to be this way. Like I told you, where I live is kind of like an example of how it can be. And like if I was to walk to the theater, it's a regular movie theater, I can park my car on the street, and there are things for me to charge my vehicle right on the street, not in a parking lot or nothing, on the regular street. Mm-hmm. From what you just said, you know what I'm scared is going to happen? I see a future where, like, let's say you go to Midtown Manhattan in New York, instead of the meters for you to pay for parking, they all be replaced with chargers. You'll pay for parking and then you'll pay for the. Oh, God.
Well, of course, that's what's going to happen. I mean, we can't give. First of all, I mean, yes, there are free chargers in many places right now. That's not going to last. There's no way that's going to last. You can't just give out free electricity to everybody in the United States when we're all going to have free electricity to charge our cars. That's never going to happen. I don't know who thinks that's going to happen. That's not going to happen.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Pretty much any major decision is always divided by economics, the economics of the people.
Yeah. My big concern is that just whenever anybody, meaning the government, is attempting to mandate or push the society towards something, that typically it's like taking a broom, right? And what happens when you push the big stuff, you know, gets pushed along by the broom and a bunch of stuff falls off the sides, off the edges. That's what happens every time government tries to push too hard at something. Unfortunately, it's the people generally at the lower end of the spectrum, that at the lower economic levels, that fall off the side of the broom.
Well, when if you were to ask a bunch of people to picture what they think of when you use the word environment, they're usually thinking of animals and wilderness and whatever. But when you live in a city or in a rural area, you live in your human and environment. And a commonality of any environment is subtle changes have ripple effects.
Yep.
It doesn't matter whether you destroyed a beaver's dam or an actual electrical dam. Whatever environment it is, the general rule is there's a ripple effect. And we are in a time where we have great scientists and all of that and great technology, but we still have not been very good at calculating ripple effects on things that we do.
No, that's a true statement. Yeah. I mean, one thing definitely leads to another, and it's something that, you know, that's why I'm a proponent of technology and advancement and change. It just has to be done with all eyes wide open, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, I mean, you got to look at everything. And trying to make things happen quickly is not always necessarily the best. And it may not be, quite frankly, it may not even be environmentally the best either. So that's something you got to look at.
I agree. You know, after the last couple of podcasts where we focused on Jeeps a lot and the Jeep events, you know, I got a tongue lashing from some people
incoming.
Saying, is this going to be all about Jeeps and everything? No, it was just because the biggest Jeep event that had happened in the whole United States occurred and we covered it. That's all.
Right.
But to make sure that we're fair and we're covering all the vehicles, I wanted to mention that the first annual Rocky Mountain Toyota Roundup is July 19th and 22nd in Ouray, Colorado. And the significance of this is, one, it's the first annual event, but it's the replacement for the old FJ Summit that ended last year. You know, they basically couldn't make it through the COVID. There's a lot of things that didn't make it through the COVID.
Yeah.
So this is basically the FJ Summit. It's the same trail leaders. It's the same people in the management of it and everything. So it's almost it's basically the FJ Summit with a new name. So if you got a Toyota, that includes Lexus, you're all invited as long as you have four-wheel drive and you can do the trails.
That sounds like a great event.
And you have an event that you
do. I want to put out there for all you guys that are Land Rover people, the 75th Diamond Jubilee anniversary of Land Rover happens to be in 2023. So with that, they are putting on an event at Greek Peak Ski Resort in Cortland, New York. That is the June 14th to the 18th. And that is interesting because, funny enough, I was involved in the 50th anniversary event with 25 years ago, 1998. At the same location. So that's happening coming up in, well, I guess that's about a month or so away. And it'll be interesting. And back then, I got my truck stuck, broke it down out in the woods in New York there and got it towed 250 miles back to Connecticut. I was living at the time. And the dealer called me up and said, Mike, what were you doing? Because, you know, you got a white Land Rover Defender and we can't really tell what color it is. It's got so much mud and stuff on it. Well, you know, it was a rough road getting in there. And the reality is I took it over this berm and I buried the front of it in this big, you know, muddy muck of whatever. And it snapped. I guess it was a cold water. It snapped the plastic fan blade, one of the blades. So the truck was still running, but it was like shaking like a off balance wash machine. In any case, that was 25 years ago. So I've been doing this for a while, but the 75 anniversary of Land Rover is 2023. So that's a big event. I think they're going to have like 500 trucks or more there. So certainly worth checking out, and fairly close to Canada. So for the you Canadians that want to drive down, it's in upstate New York.
See, Mike, I'm weird. You know what's the thing that I liked about that whole story? I'm one of those people who likes to attend the first or inaugural of an event, or the 25th or the 50th or the 100th year of something. Those are always the most memorable, and usually an event, they really show out on that 25th or that 50th or that first year. So when I hear inaugural, or I hear 25th or diamond or something like that, I get excited to go to those more because I know I'm going to get more too.
Yep.
Well, one other event, I got to mention a Jeep one. It's May 12th through 14th. It's coming up, so I got to mention it. Jeep the Mac. And the reason I'm mentioning this one is because someone hit me up with, they were like, you guys talked about the Jeep event after it was over. Tell us about these events before they happen. So here's one that's May 12th through 14th. I've attended this thing. It has my seal of approval. It's a Jeep only event. The tire size, it can't exceed 40 inches. And here's some of the good stuff about this. One is in the Upper Peninsula. If you've never been to the Upper Peninsula, it's a beautiful, beautiful part of the United States. You're
absolutely
missing out.
Worth going. Gotta go. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. This time of the year, too. Great.
Yes. The second reason is this thing is only $45. If you got kids and they're under 12, you can bring them for free. So if a guy wants to bring his two boys and they're 11 and 10 or whatever, he's spending $45 for this event. That alone separates them from a lot of these events. I've gone to some of these events where it's $450.
Yep.
And it's almost like the money that you're spending is just like a complimentary donation because of how much you get back. You get $10 credit for the casino that's nearby. You get $10 for food voucher. You get a free drink ticket. You get a free pass so that when they do the parade and take it across the Mackinac Bridge, it's free. That's like a $10 to $15 thing right there. When you start itemizing, and I didn't list everything, go onto their website to see all the stuff that you're getting for $45. When you itemize the things, you're literally getting more than what you're paying for. That's unheard of. And it's a great event. So you're not just spending your money. You're actually going to go to a great event. It's an event that's been around for a long time. And I want to end it with that I've attended this thing, but I have absolutely nothing to do with it. So this hype that I'm giving it, it's all from my heart.
And while we're talking about events, May 18th to the 21st is Overland Expo West. Flagstaff, Arizona. Come out and see Phil and I. And stop in. We've got lots of things planned. Well, actually, they're not planned yet, but we always have lots of things, so it'll be a lot of fun. And
so just saying how it is. We figured out what we're going to do, but we know it's going to be the bomb.
That's right.
Like always.
That's
right. Don't be shy, Mike.
And that is all trucks, right, are welcome. So whether you're looking into... you know, a Jeep, a Toyota, a Land Rover, Storen Stevenson, it doesn't matter. Overland Expo's got you covered. I'll be doing some instruction out there, and certainly come join us.
Okay, so we're going to switch up a little bit. How about that?
Oh, that's what we do.
All right. I like throwing you for a loop because I get the best responses from you. Because you think you know what's next, and it's not. I want to talk about passes and certificates and things like that. Most people who travel avoid buying passes for things and discount tickets for things.
When you say passes, what are we talking about?
Okay, so good question.
I was
planning to cover everything from the America the Beautiful Pass all the way to a Euro train pass. That's right. Center it up a little bit. I want people to really.
Gotta be there. There we go.
Okay. You know, we shy away from people who like to say, you're not an overlander if you don't do this or you don't have that. Now, we usually poo-poo people who say that, right? But I'm about to say this. If you live in the United States and you didn't went out and got a logo and a sticker and somewhere on there it says overland. If you think in your heart that you're an overlander and you don't, you're not, if you don't have an America the Pass, America the Beautiful Pass. That's what
I'll tell you what, I've used this pass. I cannot tell you how many times it is invaluable. Like it's for national parks, national monuments. You know, in some cases they're museums or sites of interest, or I mean, all sorts of stuff. If you went onto the website, it is amazing how many places that this pass covers and the amount of money that you would spend if you didn't have the pass. So it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's in, I believe there's stuff in all 50 states.
Oh, absolutely. That's a fact. Not only that, they can't list everywhere because those are only the places they have a formal agreement. There right. are certain areas, certain tourist places, some like Utah, where they have a thing called reciprocity. So yeah. if you have the America Pass, they honor it, even though yep. they want you to buy their Utah state, whatever. So. Yep.
That's a great example of a pass. It's like, you know, it's similar in my mind to like when you travel, like, so as a traveler, as opposed to a tourist, I typically like to do my own thing, right? I mean, it's part of the overland world. We go out, we find our way. However, I'm going to tell you, it's when you're traveling, occasionally you go to a place that you just simply don't know at all. I would recommend, and on occasion, finding a guide or somebody to show you around or paying somebody formal, particularly if you're in a country or somewhere that you don't speak the language well. So along with the pass thing, do not be afraid to use other resources to help you accomplish your goal. And your goal is probably to explore stuff, to get out and see stuff and to do adventure. So, you know, a pass like America's Pass or a tour guide to take you through the pyramids in Egypt, worth it.
The overwhelming thought that I want people to come away with this is that one of the major benefits to a pass is when you're on your trip or your journey or excursion, whatever you want to call it, you're not itemizing, oh, well, that place costs that much, so I'm not going to go there. You know, you're not itemizing things. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, with the America Pass, because I have that pass, I'll do just last minute crazy things. Like, I'll just get up on a Friday. I'll drive to Montana. I'll schedule it out so that I'm arriving there like 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll have me a bite to eat. I'll go to Glacier National Park. I'll drive the whole going to the Sun Road and get to the other end. And the only other people I see are bikes. And I just yep. drive it. Yep. When I'm in Utah, if I'm somewhere in southern Utah and I want to get quickly south to almost Arizona, I don't take 89 or 12 or any of them. You know what I do? I drive straight down through Zion National Park.
Yep.
I use that as a highway.
You know, I go to my property in Montana. I cut through Glacier National Park. I drive right through the park.
And almost every trip that people know about where I do these cross-country road trips, almost every trip I take, I end up going through Wyoming, and then I use a shortcut and go right through the Grand Tetons, through the Yellowstone, and into Idaho. So instead of driving highways, I drove through a national park.
Yep. Absolutely.
And for camping, you know, it's free to camp in the national forest, but you still have to have a permit to be in the forest.
Get in here, yeah.
So that basically gives you free camping all over the United States if you go to BLM land and national forests. Is it still $80? Mine hasn't expired yet.
It doesn't say on it. Yeah, $80.
So
mine is not expired either.
If it went up $20, if it went up $40, it's still, if you travel, you will get your money's worth. You will absolutely get your money's worth. And when you're in your vehicle, that includes everybody in the vehicle. And I don't know if everybody listening has been to a major national park recently, but the cheaper ones are like $25 and most of them are like $35.
Yeah. You only need to go a couple times and it's worth it.
I agree. And we don't want to just stick with America. Like passes. I already mentioned like the Eurorail pass. And there's passes here in America. You can buy passes to travel across the country with a train pass here in America. But like in Europe, you can get the Euro pass and you just take it and you can go anywhere. It's 33 different countries that you can travel to on this train.
Yeah, Euro pass is probably one of the best passes in all of the world. Definitely. Yep. Outer Banks, you know, the over sand permit that you can get down when you're going on the East Coast, you know, some of those places like that. I mean, it's great because you can you don't have to restrict yourself to certain places when you have the pass in advance.
And another thing that makes it great, there has been so many times where I decided to do something at a last minute and going back to like the America pass. Usually when it's really crowded, most major national parks, that right lane, they're just waving all the guys with passes like this. Yeah, it's this long line, but you just go zoom. So I just wanted to mention that. That's another reason why I have a pass.
Yeah. Yeah. While we're out talking about passes, hold on. Let's see if I got that one here. Global entry. If you don't have that and you're a traveler flying back and forth, I don't have it right here. That has saved my butt. And I'll tell you how many times. True story. Last year going into Mexico, I had a problem with my motorcycle registration because it was, go figure, it was too new and they didn't have it in their computer yet. Long and short of it is I had to go to Mexicali to a different border crossing to go get my temporary vehicle importation for the motorcycle. Well, anyways, I parked as I do. It's easier to do this when you're going across the border. I just parked on the American side and walked across the border. Walk in, go to the office, do my stuff, turn around. Going to go back to America now. Got my paperwork in hand. The line was 6 hours and 14 minutes long. For real. And they have signs. And it's the walking line is over 6 hours long. And I literally was like, oh my God. And I'm standing in line and I'm standing in line and I'm standing there. I probably stood there for 15 minutes. And then some guy, the briefcase, walks by me real fast, cuts through the whole line. And I see him go in the, I go, what? And then I go, whoa, wait a minute. He has global entry. And I go, did I bring my, you know, sure enough, I had my wallet, had it in my thing. Long and short of it is, took me 3 minutes to cross the border back into the States. It saved me 6 hours. And then I, you know, I flew back from Mexico a couple times through the airport. You don't even have to show your passport. All you got to do is walk up to the machine, put your face in front of it, spit, it doesn't even put out paper anymore. You used to put out a piece of paper. Now you just go like this and it says, all set, go to the guy. You walk up to him and he just waves you through. No immigration. That's a pass worth getting.
Right. And another one, you can look these things up on the web or through a travel agent. There are a lot of tourism agents, not tourism agencies. What is it? People who handle the tourism for your city, state, country, or whatever.
Yeah, the local tourism board.
Yeah, tourism board. That's the word. I'm sorry. A lot of times they will have worked out something with that city, state, country, or whatever, where they have a booklet or a pass, and it'll allow you to go to like the Louvre Museum and go to the Eiffel Tower, and you can take a shuttle bus and all of these little things. And when you add them up again, you save so much money. And like to take that shuttle, you get on a shuttle where they're not, you don't have to go to the little thing and pay or whatever. You just go on. There are just so many advantages to almost all levels of tourist passes. The only warning I give is make sure you've looked at what's offered and what's not and read the fine print.
Yeah.
And the only passes that I don't recommend are food passes. Mm. Not because they're not valuable, but because inevitably you're not going to eat strictly everything that's in that book.
That's right.
Now, if you're going to make that commitment, that's a great thing to do. You'll save a considerable amount of money. But in my experiences, nobody ever follows those rules.
Yep.
You'll walk past some little four table shop serving something that smells wonderful and everybody's going to want to sit down and eat.
Yep.
So we've beat this with a dead horse. My bottom line is I want people to consider passes, because that's something that has helped me financially be able to do a lot of the things that I do. Is I've got passes for everything.
Yep.
And other forms of passes I want to mention. Like, for instance, when we were talking about the Jeep event that's in the Upper Peninsula. Now, a great thing that people don't realize is there's a lot of great outdoor stuff to do and camping to do in northern Michigan and in the Upper Peninsula and all of that. But you have to have a little $15 sticker on the back of your vehicle to allow you to go anywhere you want. It's only $15. It just went up to $15. Yeah. So what I'm getting to is there are little passes like that. I have one for Montana. When I'm in Montana, I'm completely comfortable just turning off on any trail in Montana because I got my little sticker.
Yeah, me too.
And there are a lot of stickers and permits like that that allow you access somewhere you couldn't go, or allow you access at times others can't go, or allows you to go at a much cheaper price. So when you're traveling, because people have an impression, oh, if I have a pass or a discount code or a pass, you know, I'm lesser than or whatever. No, save some money. They put them out there because they want you to buy them and come and spend the money.
Yep.
That's all. Because like I think when we were talking about the Euro Trail Pass, I think that's under $800.
Something like that. Yeah, I did.
With tax under $800.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just think about being able to go to 33 different countries and go from whichever one you want on a whim for $800.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm going to move on. I wanted to rebut something. You know, we talk so positively about crossing borders and going to other countries, and we make it as though they don't have any issues. And the reason why we do is because so many people go so far overboard in the other direction and make it like once you leave America, the whole rest of the world is a war-torn environment. There are scams out there, and I'm not saying just walk around in other countries with your eyes closed. You should have your eyes open even here in the United States. So I'm hoping that I can catch you off guard and get you to talk with me about some of the common scams in developing countries. And I'll start off with the first one that comes to mind for me is fake police. I'm not saying that it's going to happen to you, folks. I'm not saying that it's a highly likely thing, but it's something that can happen. People who own a police badge or even a uniform may be crooks in disguise when you meet them when you're in other countries. So don't just...
I like to say that, let's talk about that for a second. And this, and you know why I'm excited about this is because this, we get to talk about this, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more even in next week's podcast when we measure out. No, I'm kidding. Let me briefly talk about that, because this is a longer conversation. And I really want to spend some time on international travel and talking about some of the scams and stuff out there. But like I said, you're going to have to stay tuned for another podcast. But let's talk about that one that you just mentioned, Phil. Police ranges everywhere from kids trying to collect money for their local soccer team all the way to, you know, a drug cartel. And it ranges into everything in between. And that is prevalent in, I have seen that in Africa. I've seen it in Central America. I've seen it in Mexico. I've actually even seen that in Eastern Europe. It's pretty common. It happens. And I know we've been very positive most of the time on our podcast talking about travel just in general. But there are scams out there. And you've got to pay attention to, you know, everything. I like to tell people, number one, when you're traveling, use your gut feeling, right? That's the number one thing. If it doesn't feel good, it probably isn't. And there's going to be, there's a lot to talk about there.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.